Hey, welcome back to Rush to Reason. Sitting in for John Rush is Molly Vogt and Susan Koshevar. And we are talking today about taxes. We know you work hard for your money, honey, and we want to be able to keep the majority of the fruits of our labor, and we think we should. We give a little bit of it to the government so that they can take care of certain things that we entrust them to take care of. The rest of it, we'd really like to come back to us. We budget our checkbooks every single month, and we think the government should too, because after all, it is our money they're spending. So before we went to break, we were talking to Pete Sepp, who's the president of the National Taxpayers Union, and he's been paying attention to what our new presidential candidates are saying they're going to do with taxes. And so we really think it makes sense to kind of get to the heart of the matter on what we should be doing with this money to make sure that we can keep more of it. We talked about the fair tax before we went to break and the flat tax. Susan Koshevar sitting here. She's a small business owner. She pays payroll taxes. And she had a question for you, Pete.
That's right. Because, you know, all customers, all citizens pay taxes through the things they buy. And sometimes those taxes they pay are kind of hidden. When I collect money from my customers, they're also going to pay employment taxes and other things like that. So will these fair taxes or the flat tax, will they eliminate those deductions, or how will those things get paid?
Yes. Under the fair tax, the National Retail Sales Tax System, all corporate, small business, and individual income taxes, as well as payroll taxes and other federal taxes like capital gains and inheritance taxes, would be eliminated and replaced with the sales tax. So virtually all of the small businesses' embedded tax costs that are being passed along to customers would disappear. And so what you would have is a situation where the price of goods and services would likely fall, even as people were paying the new sales tax. So that would be a bonus. Plus, again, we're talking about lifting huge compliance burdens off individuals and businesses.
Yes, absolutely.
Many businesses would have to make out a new sales tax return for purposes of remitting to the federal government, but again, they would be giving up the income tax burden and all the reporting for payroll taxes. And, you know, folks who are in business for themselves and might have employees, they are under very serious enforcement pressure from the Internal Revenue Service. If you've ever missed an income tax filing date or payment, try missing a payroll tax filing or payment. The IRS comes down on you like 10 tons of bricks, not just like a ton of bricks.
They do, and compliance is very confusing. I had a friend that missed a payroll tax filing, and when she went to pay, you can't just write a check anymore. You have to, if you've missed it, then you have to go through their electronic funds transfer. So to go through the electronic funds transfer, you have to call in and get a special number or get on a computer and get a special number. But the top of the form says stop. Make sure you don't already have a PIN number. So if you call to get the PIN number, you're just into a recording. It is such a mess. Meanwhile, you're being fined. It's incredible the mess we have.
Yes, a 100% penalty in some cases, equal to the amount of tax that's being owed.
Yep.
That's crazy. And keep in mind, you know, listeners, as I'm sure they know, and business owners, the more money that you're allowed to keep within your business, the more research and development, the more technology, the more improvements, the more advancements you can make with your products, and the more people you can hire and the more benefits you can provide to them and their families. You know, I know there are so many people in this country that are either unemployed or underemployed, and they're just struggling to make ends meet. Think about if the people, the entrepreneurs that are taking the risk to start these businesses were allowed to keep some of the money coming in, some of the profits, they could actually hire more people and get our country up and running again.
Yeah, well, and all those employment forms that you have to fill out and submit all the income taxes you can collect as an employer take a lot of time. And when you're just starting out a business, you can't afford to hire a floor of accountants to comply with all this stuff. The compliance is massive and very costly, so it keeps people from starting their own businesses.
Yeah. So think like these flat taxes, fair tax, these things that make taxes much simpler probably make sense if we want the small business group to start
succeeding
again. So Pete, tell us what is your next best idea that you've heard from presidential candidates that you think that we should share and get people to start paying attention to?
Well, there are a few savings proposals that the presidential candidates have offered so far. Many of them have called for repealing Obamacare in its entirety. In fact, virtually all of them will. Now, some would replace it with other alternatives that might actually end up costing, but the total impact of getting rid of Obamacare in its entirety dwarfs virtually all the savings we've been able to track so far. $95.4 billion less spending a year if the Affordable Care Act were repealed. Again, if you were to replace it with things like allowing individuals to purchase insurance across state lines, perhaps preserving some of the subsidies for low-income individuals to obtain insurance, again, that might take the form of refundable credits, that would start to chip away at the savings. But you could very easily design a health care reform program that is less intrusive, still serves people in need, but would leave a lot of that $95 billion a year savings intact.
Well, okay, so you're saying, right now I'm thinking what we've been talking about today, the illegal immigration, they said, is costing Americans around $200 billion plus per year. This Obamacare is costing us close to $100 billion a year, so that's about $300 billion a year. And if all it would cost for us to start to protect our borders is about $10 billion over 5 years, I think we come out on top. What do you think?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, from a fiscal policy standpoint, maybe. I would think that there are some offsetting federal budget savings in terms of lower entitlement spending. You know, part of the problem here is just simply ascertaining the number of folks who are not here legally. There are wide-ranging estimates into, and some of them vary by several million. And so we have to be cognizant of that fact, and we have to realize that some savings are going to take longer to realize than others.
Okay. Now, what about the Democrats? You know, Hillary Clinton, Bernie Sanders, and the things that they're pushing forward, have they come up with any plans you think that are going to help the economy, get money back into the economy, into families' households? Are they going to take more of it? How does their spending look?
So far, Hillary Clinton has been surprisingly glib about actual proposals to increase the federal budget. That's actually in contrast to the campaign that she was mounting for president back in 2008, where there were pages of proposals that we could score. And in fact, our website at ntu.org has some of that past information from Hillary Clinton's campaign. Now, when she was in the Senate, she actually averaged an agenda each year of wanting to increase federal spending by $226 billion a year. Various proposals, everything from creating a national infrastructure bank to expanding various federal research programs. In fairness, that was before the Affordable Care Act. It's hard to know whether many of her health care proposals would actually mesh now in the current environment of the Affordable Care Act versus when she was in the Senate many years ago. But it gives us an indication of where she would take policy if she's going to remain true to the belief she has held both as a lawmaker and as a presidential candidate. Now, of course, Bernie Sanders has a much more ambitious agenda. We are currently tracking well over $1 trillion a year of additional spending proposals. Just as a senator, he has sponsored legislation that would boost the federal budget by just over $1 trillion. Recent estimates with his campaign proposals on top of the legislation he's advocating put it at $1.8 billion a year. That's a 50% increase in federal outlays.
Wow, it's incredible. I saw a quote the other day on Facebook where he wants to tax people 90%.
Yes, we have not had a 90% tax rate since the Vietnam War era when we had a surtax in place. And that, of course, touched off a very poor performing economy in the United States into the early 1970s, well into the mid-1970s, actually, when we were dealing with things like stagflation. Mm-hmm. It was a contributing factor.
Wow. Pete, we've got to go to a break. You're free to stay on through the break and come on and give us some more ideas of what we need to be looking at as far as our presidential candidates are concerned, if you're interested in that. But we welcome you for staying on, and thanks for coming on. And we're going to go to break right now, and we'll be right back. Hey, welcome back to Rush to Reason. This is Molly Vogt and Susan Koshevar. We are sitting in for John Rush and Dan Muir, and we are just so excited to be here today. This is the last hour of the show, and it's time for us to go ahead and just get to these presidential debates. It was a big deal last night. There was a lot going on, a lot of people up on that stage, and a lot to talk about. And you know, there are a lot of issues that really matter to Americans today, and we want to hear from you. I want to hear from you. What is the most important issue you think facing our country today that what do you want our next president to make sure right out of the gate they say, this is what I'm going to tackle to make sure that Americans are secure? And so we want to hear from you, 303-477-5600. Now, we've invited Heidi Ganahl to come on and join us and talk to us about her ideas on the election, on what's needed. She's the CEO of Camp Bow Wow, a local Colorado person here, and she's really in the know about what's going on, so we invited her on. So, Heidi, hey, welcome to Rush to Reason.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
Well, thanks for joining us. Tell us, if you don't mind, tell us a little bit about you, your situation as a business owner, and what it is that you really care about the most right now. What's the most important thing you think our presidential candidate needs to make sure that they ensure you that they will do?
Well, two things. First, I'm the mom of four kids ranging in age from 3 to 20, so I'm very worried about the future of our country. And I want my kids to have the same opportunities that I've had, which leads me to the second part. I'm an entrepreneur and a CEO, and I was able to start my own business, do something that I love. And basically, because we live in a society with free markets and a focus on achieving things and, you know, doing great things in the world of business, I was able to grow a great business, Camp Bow Wow, that's a national franchise company. About $100 million brand, and do what I loved while I was doing that. And I'm worried sick that my kids are not going to have the same opportunity to do that.
I understand. You know, it's amazing because you started this business from scratch, right? Absolutely from scratch, and grew it to $100 million plus?
I did. Thank goodness people love their dogs in this country. And I saw a problem. I didn't have a place that was good enough to take my own dog. So I created Camp Bow Wow out of that problem.
And so, you know, I heard a couple of the candidates say last night that only in America could I have the opportunity to achieve what I've achieved. And it sounds like you just said that as well. You know, America is a very special place. And we know that a lot of people risk their lives to come here because they want a part of it as well. They want the same opportunity. We want to make sure that we continue that for everybody going forward. So what is it that you think that we need to make sure that this presidential candidate ensures us so that other people can build a $100 million brand like you?
Well, I mean, I think I love Carly Fiorina's take on things. I think that the government has gotten so big and so out of control that it's suffocated our ability to start businesses, to innovate, to solve problems through entrepreneurship and creative, innovative solutions. And people are just becoming unmotivated or demotivated to really get out there and start their businesses and do something they love and make a good living at it. And I think that her points about getting government regulation, getting that reduced, and getting government out of our way, and lowering the tax rate so that it's more beneficial for us to have our businesses and our employees here in America than in other places, I think all of that is the key to solving a lot of problems, not just business problems, but problems like hunger and poverty. I mean, the last 200 years, we've seen a huge decline in the number of people that are hungry in this world and the number of people that are, you know, struggling. And that's because of free markets and capitalism and what America has brought to the table. So I want to preserve that.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. Heidi, this is Susan Koshevar. You know, capitalism and the ability for individuals to start their own businesses, even something simple, gives dignity and lets people realize their hopes and dreams. There is the story about the lady who could braid hair, and she wanted to go out and do that, and she was very good. But soon, the regulatory agencies came by and said, you can't do that. You need to have a license, and you need to go to beauty school. She couldn't afford to do that, so she's sitting at home trying to figure out how to feed her kids. It keeps them on the system, and it's not fair to them.
I agree, and I mean, even at Camp Bow Wow, who knew that they would regulate the number of people we have in the play arts to monitor the dog? It's almost as restrictive as child daycare. And at one point, I asked one of the regulators, where do you come up with these rules? Like, we have a couple hundred franchises around the country, and we have an incredible safety record. Oh, it's a feeling we have. It's what we think should happen. Well, that feeling reduces profitability at our Colorado camps by upwards of 15 to 20%. So that feeling just disincentivized a lot of people to open businesses and employ people and get the economy going again.
Right. That's one of the biggest problems I see with these regulatory bodies. They look at something. Take ice skating, for example. They would look at that and say, no way can you skate around on a thin blade. Or I've had people say, if I wanted to open a drive-in in another city, they would say, well, you know, that screen is going to be a giant distraction to anybody along the road. And they won't stop to realize that, say, if you're looking at a state like Las Vegas, they have giant screens with dancing girls on them, and yet drivers don't crash. So, you know, just because you can make up all the problems in the world that won't necessarily ever happen. And they stop things.
One point that I think this discussion translates so well to the debate last night and why the front runners on the Republican side are all outsiders is because, I mean, honestly, they're business people. They have common sense. They can see what's going on and the roadblocks to getting America back to great again by innovating and starting new businesses and getting the economy going. And I think that people recognize that we need some fresh perspective, and we need some not professional politicians in there to solve these problems. So I think that explains why the front runners are not your typical politicians.
I think that makes sense, Heidi. You know, our founding fathers, they went in to do their job, and then they wanted to get back to work. They wanted to get back to their homes. They had real jobs outside of Washington, D.C. or outside of Pennsylvania. You know, it wasn't like they wanted to come in and just stay there for a lifetime. They wanted to go back and farm. They were merchants. They were attorneys. They were teachers. They had so many different things they were doing. It wasn't a lifelong process for them to stay in this new ruling class. And you mentioned Carly Fiorina, and I noticed that she mentioned that last night as well. And she said, you know, the politicians have been there so long that they're swimming in the same water over and over and over again. They can't see outside, and they're not challenging the status quo. And I think that makes a lot of sense that you bring that up, and that she does too. I think it is time for us to have some fresh blood, and I think that it'd be great for us to have people that come in that come from a business background, that understand what does it mean to start a business? What do regulations do? Is there some that help, and is there a limit that so many are actually going to help you get something started and keep everybody safe? But is there a line, and where is that line that now you've got so many regulations that you're just drowning these business owners, and you're stifling growth, and you're making it so that they can't afford to hire employees or grow their business or what have you? I think it makes a lot of sense for us to have people sitting in these seats that are representative of the people that they're representing, because they actually do have real life experience.
Well, she started out one of her comments by saying, my husband and I were semi-drivers, you know, semi-truck drivers. So, you know, she's sort of saying, listen, I'm kind of grounded.
Yeah, she is. And I think running a company like Hewlett-Packard, I mean, she had to make some really, really tough decisions. And I've had to do the same thing at Camp Bow Wow. When the recession hit, I had to lay off some of my closest family and friends. You don't do that as a leader because you want to hurt people or have them lose their jobs. You do it because you need the business to survive so that you can keep as many people employed as possible and grow it again and get people back on their feet.
And right.
If she hadn't have laid off those folks, then there wouldn't have been a business to employ the remaining tens of thousands of people and keep the business operating. So it hurts my heart when I hear people say that, you know, like, oh, you know, you shouldn't lay off people. Well, if you're doing it to save the business and for the better good of the company to keep it going so that more people can have jobs and more people can be, you know, self-sustaining, then I think that makes sense.
Right.
Yeah. Well, great, Heidi. We think it makes sense, too. And thank you for all the jobs that you have created in this country. And we know that, you know, small business owners create more than 90% of the jobs. And we all want to make sure that we get America back to work. So thank you for what you do. And thank you for chiming in, letting us know what you think about the debate last night. And keep it up. And we look forward to talking to you again soon.
All right. Thanks so much, you guys. And have a great day.
Thanks, you too. Heidi Ganahl with Camp Bow Wow. And she had some good information on last night's debate. We're going to go to a break and come back and talk to a friend of ours that's a libertarian and see what he thinks and what his views on the debate are. David K. Williams.
Good afternoon. You are listening to Rush to Reason, and I am not John Rush. I am Susan Kochevar. I am sitting in for John Rush along with Molly Vogt of the Americhicks, and we are talking about the debate last night. We have David K. Williams on the line. He is the former chair of the Libertarian Party here in Colorado and attorney extraordinaire. Welcome to the show.
I'm not sure about the extraordinary part, but thank you. It's always a pleasure to talk to the two of you.
Well, thanks for joining us, Dave. You know, every time we get into these conversations about, you know, Democrats versus Republicans versus libertarians, it's always a very interesting one. And you, of course, are an expert on the difference and have a very unique way of looking at the policies and how they're going to affect people today. And so we wanted to invite you on. Did you watch the debate last night?
I did. I saw about two-thirds of it.
Okay, cool.
But yeah.
Well, tell us, first of all, just in your mind, what is the most important issue you think facing us today that we need to be making sure that our presidential, the next president, either, you know, takes care of, focuses on, gets rid of, what have you?
Instead of an issue, because what I think I'm going to say is going to apply to whatever issue you can come up with, I think the most important trait in any president or any candidate for president is a belief in limited government.
Okay.
And that's it. Then whatever issue comes up, you're going to have a spectrum of choices, and one of them is going to be less government. And whenever I see any of the candidates talk about how another government program is going to solve the problem, that means that they don't have that philosophy. And that's what I'm always looking for. Who gets it? Who understands the federal limitations on the Constitution, or the Constitution puts on the federal government? And who understands that? Who believes in individuals being able to solve problems without the use of government force?
And of all those candidates, was there any one of them that you think kind of gets it?
I think, and again, this is, you know, four group of Republicans, the two that I think get it the best are Rand Paul and Ted Cruz. Now I disagree with them on issues, but compared to the rest, those are the two that I think do the best in that regard.
Okay, and so obviously there's so many programs that are just killing us, right? They're killing us financially. They're killing us regulatory ways. They're killing jobs. They're hurting us. Can you tell me a couple of, you know, just programs or regulations that are in place right now that you think would be the most important? If they could only take back one or two, what should they take back, and what would the benefit for the people be?
Oh, man. There's a potpourri of choices, but let's go with the Department of Education. The federal government really has no business telling local school boards how to run education. The people in, say, Castle Rock or Natchez, Mississippi, or Bangor, Maine, wherever it might be, those people at that school board know their district and their students and what they need better than a huge office building full of bureaucrats in Washington, D.C. And all of the money that the federal government puts into the Department of Education and micromanaging from D.C., telling local school boards what they have to do, is counterproductive. It's wasted money. It makes the problem worse than what they're trying to fix, and that's educating the children while they're in school. So I think that would go a long way. So there's a lot to choose from, but that's certainly right up there.
Well, I'm glad to hear, of course, you're a father, so I'm glad that you know, you understand what's going on with education here right now.
Yes. To that extent, to whatever extent I might. But yes, I do have a child in school. But it's not public school, but that's a whole other story.
Well, one of the proper roles of government is look out for us, for our safety. So is there a candidate you think that has the best foreign policy?
I've got to say, and this is where most of your Republican viewers are going to chew me out, is Rand Paul. Let me explain the difference again, because this happens all the time, is the difference between isolationism and non-interventionism. Isolationism is an economic policy that means we're not going to trade with anybody, or we're going to put huge tariffs on goods coming in because we want to protect our local or national economies. That's isolationism. Libertarianism, and to the extent Rand Paul pretends to be libertarian, isn't like that. He believes in free trade. He thinks that's the best way to maintain positive relationships with other countries, is selling them stuff and buying their stuff. So that's isolationism. And when people use that word to describe Rand or Ron Paul's foreign policy, they're either being intentionally misleading or they're ignorant, one or the other. Because what they believe in is non-interventionism, and that means getting American troops out of foreign countries where we don't have any business being. I used to know this exact number, but there's hundreds of military bases throughout the world. And to suggest that we could bring some of those people home and close some of those bases isn't really that radical an idea.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What do you think about the Syrian refugees that President Obama is talking about bringing into America today?
I wouldn't bring any of them in. And the first reason I wouldn't is because we don't owe any obligation to the Syrians. And if the other Arab countries are refusing to take any of them in, that to me is a huge red flag. And if they're not going to take any of them in, I certainly don't think it's our obligation to do so.
All right. Great. Well, thanks. David, thanks so much for calling today. Is there anything extra that you wanted to add really fast on any of the candidates or the issues that everybody needs to think about?
No, I think we hit it all. But people can check me out on Twitter at Blue Carp. Check out the blog at bluecarp.com.
Great.
Always a pleasure, ladies.
Awesome. Thanks so much,
David.
We have a caller, and thank you so much, Gary, for waiting. I think you may be the one that called earlier, so welcome to Rush to Reason.
Oh, hi. I was wondering if you might be able to help me understand something.
Okay, what's that?
You know, I heard a lot of things that all these candidates would give us, you know, this incredibly strong military, incredibly well-maintained borders, et cetera, et cetera. But what I didn't hear is reducing the deficit. I mean, eventually, we've got to get to a balanced budget, and eventually, after that, we've got to get to a surplus. And I don't buy the argument that we're going to grow the economy and therefore generate additional taxes. I think that's not going to happen anytime soon, and I mean in the next decade. I don't buy the argument that the tax code is going to get revised anytime soon, and I mean in the next decade. So what I'm looking for is a candidate who has a plan to give us all this stuff and begin moving toward a balanced budget. And the only way I can see that is to offset all of these new things with spending cuts. Has anyone, I like Carla Fiorina, and has she approached that subject, or has anyone indicated that there would be a cut in federal spending?
Okay. I think that's a great topic. Let's talk about it. We've got to go to commercial right now. Gary, feel free to stay on. We'll be right back, but we're going to talk about that next. We've got to go to break. Hey, welcome back to Rush to Reason. John Rush is on vacation, and he has asked a couple of his female friends to sit in for him. So it's Molly Vogt here with the AmeriChicks, as well as Susan Koshevar. And we're talking about the election, and we'd love to hear from you. And right before we went to break, we had a caller, Gary, and I appreciate the call, Gary. Thanks so much, because you're totally right on. You know, one of the things Gary said that was so important to him is we've got to make sure that we reduce the deficit. Stop the spending. Stop the expenses. I 100% agree. You know, In your family budgeting, what you've got to do is you've got to sit down and go through your budget plan and make sure that you're not spending more than you're taking in. It's pretty simple math, budgeting.
Right.
I don't even need to say economics, right? I mean, it's just finance 101. You learn how to balance your checkbook when you're in high school, maybe less. I don't know, depending on your family. I know I did. But you look at how much money is coming in and how much you're going to spend, and you can't have a deficit. You can't do that in your household.
Right. Well, the argument we keep getting is that it's, you know, we just owe it to ourselves, and that's really not going to work in the end. All of our money is backed by debt right now, and that's such a bad thing.
Yeah, right.
So, and I don't think I heard any candidate say that last night.
Right. It seemed like they were more talking about what are they going to do to lessen our cost out of pocket, which is great because I appreciate that because we need more money in our pocket so we can balance our checkbooks. But we need to hear the candidates talking about how are they going to reduce their spending of our money, because that's the whole thing is, you know, the government, when they spend money and they're giving away, you know, free phones and free TVs mm-hmm. and free housing and free food and all this to people, that's not free.
No.
The government doesn't have any money.
Mm-hmm.
The government doesn't create any wealth. That comes from we, the people. It comes from the labor that we produce. And it's like they're stealing it from us if they take too much. And they should ask us how much they can have and what do we want them to spend it on. And in the beginning, it seems like we had an agreement as far as that, right? You know, the entitlement programs, the welfare programs, we said we do want to take care of widows and orphans and the people that are very, you know, that are sick, that are hurt, that are handicapped. They can't make it for themselves. Of course, we are the most charitable mm-hmm. nation in the world, and we want to take care of people. And then we want to give towards roads. We want to give towards the schools. We want to give towards these things that we know are the best for all of our communities. And it seems at this point the government has started spending so much money that it's like they're putting together new regulations just to keep themselves employed and just to create new jobs in the government sector. When you create new jobs in the government sector, Susan, you and I both know, that's not creating more people that are creating wealth.
No.
That's taking more money out of the economy.
No, they're not producing something of value, and they tend to just grow their jobs. So I really object to them calling tax money revenue. Businesses, you know, have revenue, not the government. They don't go out and earn it.
Yeah. You know, it was interesting. We were talking to Pete Sepp with the National Taxpayers Union earlier, and he went through kind of a list of costs that we're paying right now in America that I think would be great if we could get rid of that spending,
yeah.
get rid of those costs. That money goes back into our pockets, and that gets us off the hook for, like, so many hundreds of billions of dollars of debt. You know, one, he said the amount of money that we're spending on illegal immigrants in this country, it's costing us more than $200 billion a year mm-hmm. to maintain them here. He also mentioned another $95.4 billion that we're spending on the Affordable Care Act, mm-hmm. which most people have found is not affordable, and it's not actually giving them free health care.
Or better health care.
Or better health care, exactly. And so if we could cut the spending on both of those things, we'd be saving this country about $300 billion a year. Mm-hmm. That sounds like a great idea.
Well, it's even more than that, because you have to, that's all debt. And so you have to pay interest on that debt. And I didn't hear how the Federal Reserve voted today, but if they vote to increase the interest rate, then we have to pay more in debt. You know, you pay to service that debt, that increased interest rate. So that means our debt goes way up. And we're in some serious trouble there.
We are in some serious trouble. And so I think what makes sense is, yeah, you know, like Carly Fiorina said, let's put some people into office that come from a business mm-hmm. background, that actually understand how to balance a budget, that understand economics. I think, why don't we put some people in office that have been teachers, that understand education? Because like David K. Williams said, it would be better for us to have local control over the schools rather than national control over the schools. Because as we know, not every kid learns the same. Not one size does not fit all. We are individuals, and our communities are different. Our states are different. Mm-hmm. Our needs are different. And so if it's so top down and so big that we're, you know, a bureaucrat that you never see, that you never meet, that doesn't have to look you in the eye, is making a decision for your life, it's maybe not the best for you.
Well, that's the problem with these big regulatory bodies, because those are people that are totally unaccountable. If you don't like what somebody does who's been elected, then you can go back and vote them out. But when we have these giant regulatory bodies like the people in the IRS or any of these regulatory bodies, you cannot go and just vote them back out. You're stuck.
Right, right, yeah. The alphabet soup of regulatory agencies, mm-hmm. as we call the fourth branch of government, like the EPA.
The hidden branch, I like to call it. And it's massive. It's a leviathan.
Right. Like, as we saw what they did here in Colorado, you know, with the big spill into mm-hmm. our rivers.
Perfect example.
somebody made a comment, why don't we, you know, fine them? Why don't we take some money away from them? And you can't fine the EPA because then you're fining the taxpayers because the EPA, like the government, doesn't make any money, don't create any wealth. What they spend is our money. So maybe the best thing would be for somebody like them to say, wow, you just did what you told us not to do, and you're hurting, you know, millions of people, more than millions of people, as far as their drinking water, the fish, the wildlife, the tourist adventures that are taking place here or could be taking place here in Colorado that now won't be because you spoiled our rivers. Maybe we start to take some of that money back from you, take it out of your budget. Maybe we'll handcuff the EPA a little bit, handcuff some of those agencies so they don't have as much money to go after you and yours.
Well, and I heard the other day their solution to this problem is to build a whole new water treatment plant sort of below all of that mess. Is that the best solution, actually? I'd really like to talk to some of these private companies and find out what is the best, most practical solution for cleaning that water. You know, they can just, the EPA can throw a bunch of taxpayer money at it.
Yeah. Well, and again, it seems like, you know, when the government, because I'm considering them the fourth branch of government, when a regulatory agency comes in and creates a problem and they think that they're the solution to that problem and they come up with a solution, that doesn't make sense to me because two wrongs don't make a right.
Right.
So let's continue talking about the election, the debate for the election last night. So Barry Farah has called in, and he is a businessman who's very successful here in America, and he knows a lot about what's going on. We've invited him to come on. He's going to go through the list of kind of the 11 candidates and talk about the debate and give his opinion on their topics, on what they talked about and what they suggested. And we're going to talk to Barry right after this break.
Good afternoon. It looks like such a beautiful day out there. And no, I am not John Rush. He is on vacation. This is Susan Kochevar. I'm here with Molly Vogt, one of the Americhicks, and we are sitting in for John Rush today. Hope John's enjoying his vacation. On the line with us, we have Barry Farah. He is the CEO of Precocity, a high-tech company that provides big data, big analysis, user experience, user interface, and interactive software for some of USA's leading brands. Barry has created jobs for over 25 years. He loves free markets, free people, and donates his time speaking to the political arena from a businessman's perspective because he loves America. Welcome, Barry, and I have a question for you. Gary called in and wanted to know if anyone had talked about reducing debt, any of the people last night who were the candidates on the debate. Did you hear that?
Debt, they mentioned the $18 trillion debt, but they didn't talk about how they would take it down. And that's one of the, I would say, one of the ridiculous questions that was not asked. Should have been asked by the moderator.
Right.
You know, you guys are Republicans. One of your issues is fiscal responsibility. And since you consider yourselves fiscally responsible, how will you specifically reduce the debt if that's such a big deal to you, which of course it is to us?
And I didn't hear that question.
And the only folks that mentioned it just did so in passing.
Yeah, not a lot of substance there, more fighting with Donald Trump and talking about who was talking about whose face.
Yeah, that was pretty unusual, in my opinion, for a presidential campaign. But I guess to argue for them, they were probably looking at it from the perspective of, you know, we want to unsettle them just a bit. And by unsettling them, maybe we can find out their true character. And I guess there's an argument for that.
I guess so. One of the things that happened when President Obama ran, people kept, you know, hope and change and talking about those sort of things, and they forgot to ask about policies. And I guess that's what alarmed me the most about the questions last night. They were not about policies, and there's so many important things to look at and to help differentiate the candidates.
No, absolutely. You know, if you go down the 11, you know, you can sort of group them into three categories, I suppose. You've got the establishment folks that are senators, you got the establishment governors, and then you have the non-establishment folks. And you look at someone like Carly, and in my opinion, she really stole the non-establishment folks. I just thought she was much better and much stronger than Trump or Ben Carson, if those are the three that are in that classification. I think she was on her game.
Tell me, what did you think? Like, what did Carly say that you think people resonated with the most?
Well, from a specific standpoint, you know, know, she touched on foreign policy with some substance. She went through, you know, the situation over in Iran, and she tied that, amazingly brought that back and tied that to the Planned Parenthood issue. And then when she brought the link to those two issues, she described the character of the American people as a nation, and not in a scolding way, but as a mature mother saying, children, we can't lose the character of our nation. And I thought she did that effectively. I mean, she's not coming across as a candidate of, I want to be liked by you. She might need to get a couple tips on smiling once in a while. That'd probably be okay. But she's saying, I'm going to be a Margaret Thatcher type. I'm going to come across serious and help solve these problems. But, you know, she went specific on a number of issues, and probably as effectively as anybody except for maybe Rubio when it was actually a policy issue. When there was a true policy issue that Trump was trying to address, it seemed like he was lost.
Yeah, I feel the same way, Barry. I didn't think that he answered anything with an answer. He almost had a President Obama answer, so that it was a, you know, don't worry about it. It's hope and change, but you don't need to know what the hope is. You don't need to know what the change is. You know, I'll manage it. I'll become friends with everybody around the world. And that kind of made me nervous. I thought about, sometimes it seemed to me like President Obama's foreign policy is that he's just going to sit down in a jacuzzi with Saddam Hussein and drink a Chardonnay, and they're going to figure out the problems. And then, you know, the Middle East is no longer going to want to kill America. And so when I hear somebody like Trump say he's just going to make friends with everybody, that makes me kind of concerned, and I'm looking for more of a real answer. What do you think? Do you think his answer was right on? Do you think he answered the question, or what more do you think he should have said?
Well, you know, just for full disclosure, you know, I'm not trying to denigrate any candidate, because he is a candidate, but I would not be a Trump supporter. The reason is policy. I do appreciate his stirring things up to get us to think about immigration and solve problems effectively. But it seems like he's getting close to running out of steam. That's a really good contribution to bring us to a place where we're going to actually talk about solving problems and busting past being owned by special interests. And those are good, valuable contributions. But when you ask him a specific question about how he's going to take care of ISIS, he sits there and says, I'm going to take care of ISIS. It's going to be great. I'm going to do a great job of that. Mm-hmm. I'm amazing at that. I've got it all figured out. I mean, he doesn't give you any answers. And then you listen to Rubio, and Rubio goes in and gives a list of the issues. He says, you know, well, I'm going to take care of Putin. Trump says, I'll talk to him. I'll sit down and talk to him. Well, that's Obama's policy, and that doesn't work so well. Carly comes out and says, I'm not going to talk to him. I've met Putin. I'm going to communicate to him by increasing the size of the Sixth Fleet. I'm going to take our missile program and put it right back in Poland where it belonged. And she's going down the list of things that Obama did to demilitarize us and increase Putin's strength in Russia. And you get to Rubio, and he goes through and he talks about how Russia is desiring to destroy us and to be the leader in the Middle East, and that they're happy about what's going on in Damascus and in Syria, and that's why that they're inserting themselves. Meanwhile, Obama's sitting around, and if you actually pull back Trump's persona and just look at the policy, his policy on foreign policy is similar to Obama's.
Trump's is, you're saying?
Trump's is.
Yeah,
he's busting
it, yeah, because he, I mean, if you look at his actual words, mm-hmm. You know, I'm going to go over and I'm going to talk to Putin, and I'm telling you, I'm going to solve it. Okay.
Yeah.
So what is the problem? Well, you know, I'm going to talk to him.
Right.
And if that doesn't work, and if that doesn't, if you remember when we were talking about foreign policy, and if that doesn't work, then I'll have to change. Okay, so my policy is I'm going to talk to him, and if that doesn't work, I'll have another policy.
Yeah, so I'm going to hope that this works, and if it doesn't work, then I'm going to change the policy. Hang on, Barry, we're going to go to break. Hold on through the break. We want to keep going through these debates with you. Hang on. Hey, Colorado, welcome back to Rush to Reason. John Rush is on vacay and sitting in as Molly Vogt and Susan Kochevar. And we are talking about the election debate that took place last night. And we had 11 presidential candidates sitting in. And we've invited Barry Farah to come on and talk to us about it. Barry is the CEO of Percosity. And Barry, just right before we went to break, was kind of going through a list and talking about some bits and pieces that we should have, if we didn't catch, we want to make sure that we caught, because we want to make sure that when it's time to hit the voting booths, we know what everybody stands for and how it's going to affect the country. So, Barry, welcome back, and please continue on.
Oh, well, thanks. I did actually look up Trump's actual quote. And again, I'm not trying to trash him, because I do appreciate what he's brought to the debate. I do appreciate his insistence on us being bigger than party and thinking through solving problems and not kowtowing to all these special interests. So I give him great credit for that. But here's his actual quote when they asked about his foreign policy on Syria. Syria is a mess. You look at what's going on with ISIS in there. Now think of this. We're fighting ISIS. ISIS wants to fight Syria. Why are we fighting ISIS in Syria? Let them fight each other and pick up the remnants. Okay, so that is President Obama's strategy in Syria. So I guess that's okay if that's your strategy, but I don't think he's aware that that is actually the same. And so my point was simply that if you're talking about foreign policy, if you're attempting to appeal to the conservative base, you're either going to go as a libertarian like Rand Paul and argue for less involvement, or Rubio or Carly, who established, hey, we're the party of strong defense and we win peace through strength. And they had a much more articulate answer in that area. So that was my point on the foreign policy piece.
Okay. Great. And I think a lot of people today, everyone I'm hearing, and me myself, saying the most important issue to me right now, I feel like, is the safety and the security of our country. And that means from people that are in this country being brought in, may it be as refugees, as immigrants being pushed over the border that we're just turning a blind eye to, you know, what's happening in the Middle East. And these guys want to take us down. So I think it's pretty important. What other topics do you think are important for us to remember from last night?
Well, what we didn't cover is the economy. I was wondering when somebody was going to ask a question about what is your economic plan.
Oh, that one.
What we didn't cover, which is where I think we shine, what we didn't cover is what the alternative would be for healthcare reform, which I think some of the governors would have shined with that answer. I think people would have listened to that. And so those were two questions I thought should have been asked, and to me they're glaring misses. But what I think, if you look through the group, I think Rubio did a pretty good job as the establishment candidate in the senator ranks. I would probably, if it was me, I would give him the highest score. He was cogent. He was articulate. He used big words in a way that everybody understood. Eviscerate. He said that like two or three times, but he said it so well.
It stood out.
And yeah, how do you say eviscerate twice in one paragraph and still make it sound good? So I thought he was effective and passionate. Walker started out strong going over to the gubernatorial side, but then he just faded. And I was watching him and waiting for him to rise up and show us how he, you know, pushed back the unions and how he was strong. But middle of the debate, he throttled back. And you could see it physically. You know, everyone was pushing their way in, and I think he's just a respectful, honorable Midwestern guy. But in a brawl with 11 people, the guys that had the most amount of time, you know, inserted themselves more aggressively. And so I think, unfortunately for him, he's going to get dinged for not rising up to the occasion. You look through the rest of the list there, I didn't think Cruz really established himself as different than what we already understood him to be. I thought he was effective, and you know, he's done a lot of things that have that should appeal to those who want somebody who's a fighter. But what I thought that he didn't do as well, he didn't connect. Looking into the camera when somebody's asking you a question almost works against you unless it's natural and relaxed. And so he's looking into the camera almost as if it was polished and planned and scheduled. And the thing that I think he was trying to do is communicate that he's genuine and authentic. And I think that sort of backfired on him. That's my opinion on that. Mm-hmm. Then you get over to Carson. He was quiet. And, you know, you got to love the guy. He's kind as they come. He is probably one of the most decent human beings that have ever run for president. You know, he's done such great things for people and he's got a great heart. But he was completely confused. I mean, lost on Afghanistan and Iran. I mean, in Iraq, no one thought, not even liberals, that we shouldn't go in and attack Afghanistan. They're the ones that attacked us. And he communicated that he was not sure that it was the right idea to do that. And he did it in a very kind of muddled way. So I felt like he underperformed and was not as strong as he needed to be to push to the next level.
Well, hey, at least at one point in the thing, he and Trump seemed to make up, because now, you know, Trump's calling him a pretty good doctor and he's calling Trump a pretty good doctor when it comes to the vaccine thing.
What are we talking about vaccines for? We've got economic issues. We've got regulatory issues. We have national defense issues. And we're talking about whether a president believes that it's okay for his kids to get vaccinated or if the government should be able to impose themselves there. I mean, I suppose it's a good argument to be able to see where you stand in terms of what federal and state rights are. But goodness, I thought that was silly.
I think it's silly, too. And I think it was almost kind of the point. Last night was to take the views and let's start paying attention to something that doesn't really matter, because I don't really have the answer to what does matter. But that's just me personally. So sorry about that.
You look at Christie now, if you're going down the list, I thought of the governors, Christie probably had a couple of the best moments. You know, when he said, hey, Carly, you and Trump can talk about how successful you are all you want. That's great. But I think the American people want us to start talking about them. I thought, you know, at the moment, I thought it was a great base hit and maybe a triple. But then afterward, it kind of lingered with me, and I thought it was maybe contrived. That he'd kind of thought about it beforehand and was just waiting for the opportunity, because obviously he was touting all of his personal attributes, and then he was scolding them for touting their personal attributes. And so I thought Carly was effective, though, because she circled back to that issue and said, well, you know, I just heard you touting something, Governor Christie, and I just heard this other candidate, Kasich, touting his credentials. I think it's important for people to establish what they've done and communicate that. So, interesting night, but I thought he did okay.
Yeah.
I thought what he communicated to the average voter, which I think is what people are looking for, is that if you're looking for a fighter who's more establishment and who was a governor and who's a spunky fighter and who will kind of get in your face, I think Christie is an alternative to Trump.
Yeah, Trump's sort of busting the political correct correctness, you know, so that's
he
bubble
is.
And that's a good thing, I think. And then I think, Carly's changing the conversation, and I think that's a good thing too.
No, I agree with you. I think that, again, I do think Trump brings a lot to the table in this respect. If you're worth $10 billion and you make $400 million a year, you've got the personal security to say whatever the heck you want. And you don't have to worry about what anybody else is going to say about you. And there is some benefit to that and there's some value. I think if he's going to go for the long term, to circle back to Trump, I think he's probably a smart enough guy that if he was willing to just submit to a little bit of learning, you know, maybe go to American Enterprise Institute, learn a little from them, Heritage Foundation, get a little knowledge from those guys, do a couple of tours of policy just to get a little understanding of what conservatives think about foreign policy, economic issues. His tax policy is liberal. He wants a progressive tax policy. He wants to tax those who have earned and produced a lot again after they've already paid taxes on it.
Right.
I don't know if he really understands what he's wanting, but if he really understands it, that's liberal. That's not a conservative ideology.
You're taxing people for success, which is anti-American.
Yeah, and you should know your audience. We've got 1 minute left, Barry. What's the last kind of takeaway from the night?
Oh, okay. Well, I guess you get to, I think Carly won the non-establishment group. I think Christie probably eked out a slight win on the establishment governors. And I think Rubio won the senator group by a pretty long margin. That's my opinion.
Okay.
Interesting way to analyze.
Analyze.
Thank you.
Well, hey, guys. Well, thanks so much for having me on. And appreciate it. Love your show. Thanks for filling in for Rush. That's a good thing. And you guys have a great night.
Awesome. Great. Thanks, Barry Farah. We'll talk
to you
next time.
All righty. Bye-bye.
And so the time is coming to an end. And so Molly Vogt and Susan Kochevar here are sitting in for John Rush, Rush to Reason. And we just want to say thanks so much to John for letting us sit in here and talk to your great listeners and enjoy this beautiful day. And we'd love to come back again. So let us know whenever you'd like us to. And you know what? We at KLZ, we're all in this fight together. And we believe that we've got to work together to make sure that we hold up this great country, because it is awesome. And people risk their lives to come here for a reason. So let's make sure the laws stick. All right. Y'all have a good night, and we'll talk to you next time.